This is the weekly Parsha Shiur with Rabbi Chaim Bravender of Atid and WebYeshiva.org. Recorded live in Jerusalem at Beit Knesset Haramban. Visit www.webyeshiva.org for live interactive online Shiurim today.
The Parsha is called Vayishlach, and it's the Parsha of Yaakov Avinu. The Parsha of Yaakov Avinu. The particular issue that I would like to look at, with your permission, is the changing of Yaakov's name. Yaakov was called Yaakov from birth, and his name was changed into Yisrael. Into Yisrael, the parish of the Psukim that are relevant to us begin in Perek Lamed Hei, Pasuk Tet. So let's look at the Psukim, and we'll look at Rashi as well, a little bit. The parasha begins, Vayera Elokim al Yaakov od bivo'o mipadan aram vayevarech oto. This business of brachot, you know, is a very significant theme in Sefer Bereshit. God gives a bracha, and the bracha is sometimes inherited by the children, sometimes it's given again independently. Sometimes both are true. You inherit the bracha and you get the bracha. In this case, Vayar Elokim El Yaakov Od, again, Od means again. The Vo'odni Padan Aram. Padan Aram was where he had lived under the aegis of Lavan Ha'arami. Vayivarech Oto. Vayomer lo Elokim Shimcha Yaakov lo Yikarei Shimcha Od Yaakov. Yisrael Yeshmecha. Now we know that he was Yisrael beforehand. Right? You remember he had this fight with the angel representing Esav, and the angel said that that he's better called Yisrael. But here God, Hashem, formalizes it, and he says that your name is really Yisrael. Vayomer lo Elokim anikel shidai prei urvei goy ukahal goyim yemim mecha. And then he adds these words. Goy, these are words that we know already. Kahal goyim, goy, nations, right? Avram Avinu, Yitzchak got that bracha. Now Yaakov gets that bracha. But this bracha, mlachim michalatzecha yetzeu, was a little bit of a problem. What could be referred to? Melachim michalatzecha yetzeu. We know that Shaul HaMelech was from the tribe of Binyamin, right? But Binyamin, strangely enough, had not yet been born. So it could be that the bracha related to the birth of Binyamin somehow. Rashi addresses this question, and Rashi says, "Melachim." You see the Rashi on Pasuk Yud Aleph Melachim. Shaul the Ishboshet. Shaul the Ishboshet. Ishboshet was the oldest son of David HaMelech. Shayu Mishavet Binyamin. Shadayin Lo Nolad. Okay, so what? Shaul the Ishboshet. What?
Ishboshet, the son of Shaul.
Right, I'm sorry, what did I say? No. I said Shaul the Ishboshet. Shaul, and Ishboshet was his son. When Shaul died, inappropriately, Ishboshet became the king of Israel for a short time. Shadayin Nolad, Adayin Lo Nolad, refers to Binyamin. So since Binyamin was not yet born, it makes sense to Rashi that this would be a bracha. That the bracha was that Binyamin will be born. Umlachim imeru yitzchalat tzecha yitzeu is just a reference to Binyamin. It's not the bracha. It's not that the bracha is that Binyamin, that you will have children who will be kings. The bracha is that Binyamin will be born. because that's the topic. We go back to the psukim, pasuk yud bet. Ve'eta aretz asher natati l'Avraham l'Yitzchak l'cha t'nena l'zarecha acharecha eten et haaretz. And there's a separate bracha, like it's true for Avram, for Yitzchak, and now for Yaakov. There are two brachot. One bracha has to do with progeny, and the other bracha has to do with Eretz Yisrael. With Eretz Yisrael, and starting from Avraham Avinu, you know that there was great faith in the bracha of progeny, but not so much faith in the bracha of Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara and Rashi also says that Avraham Avinu was the first one who asked the question, well, what happens to Eretz Yisrael if my children are not worthy? Avraham Avinu asked that question. In other words, Avraham Avinu knew that if something bad happens and the people are punished, his children are punished, then they would still be the children of Avraham Avinu. They wouldn't be wiped out. That punishment did not occur to anybody. But if they were bad, they would lose Eretz Yisrael. That's what Avraham Avinu said. And so the Gemara relates this conversation as being a little bit more complicated. That Avraham Avinu said, what happens if the temple is destroyed? Then we don't have any kind of reference point with which to hold on to Eretz Yisrael. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says that still, Eretz Yisrael belonged to you, so what if we're sent into exile, and there's no Beit HaMikdash, and there's no Korbanot, and there's nothing that we do that connects us to Eretz Yisrael in a real way? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, okay, it's okay, when you daven, in the morning, and before you start Psukei Dezimra, daven a little bit about Korbanot. And if you daven a little bit about Korbanot, Zechariah says to Avraham Avinu, it'll be your claim. That will maintain your claim on Eretz Yisrael. What maintains your claim on Eretz Yisrael is that you are davening for Korbanot. You know that every morning, in the Siddur at least, you know, we all know that some people come a little late for davening, and they want to get up to the really important parts. So they skip the unimportant parts that are in the beginning. And there's a parak of Mishnayot, Ezu Mekoman, starts with those words. And it's, of course, about Korbanot, it's Mishnayot in Menachot. But the question is, still a question, how is that chapter chosen? What? It's Zvachim. I'm sorry. It's in the same volume in my Shas, you know. So why is that chapter chosen of Mishnayot? Because there's a lot of prakim about Korbanot, Zrachim and Menachot, etc., Kritut, many. So why was that parak chosen? So if you go back and you take a look at all the Mishnayot, all the Mishnayot from Zraim till the end of Taharot, there's only one perek in Shas in which there is no machloket. One, it's like the Jewish thing, right? One person says one thing, somebody else says the opposite. It's like the most Jewish thing that there is. So there's one perek in Shas in which there's no machloket. And that's it. So that's what we say in the morning. Because we're really responding to Avraham Avinu's question. And the question was, what's going to happen after the Churban Beit HaMikdash and we are exiled from Eretz Yisrael? The answer is, we'll learn the Mishnayot. That's the answer. Oh, if I have to learn the Mishnayot, I have to pick. I can't learn all the Mishnayot every day. So I picked the one without a machloket. The one without the machloket. Okay, let's go back to our problem. Pasuk Yud Gimel, Vayal Me'alav Elokim B'Makom Asher Diber Imo V'Yatzev Yaakov Matzeva. Pasuk Yudalet, right? You see that Pasuk Yudalet? What does it say? It says Vayetzev Yaakov Batseva. Now who wrote that pasuk? Who wrote that pasuk? The correct answer is I don't know. Who gave that pasuk to Bnei Yisrael through Moshe Rabbeinu? HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So if HaKadosh Baruch Hu says in pasuk Tet, your name is Yisrael, how come three psukim later HaKadosh Baruch Hu calls him Yaakov? And the continuation of this parasha is more Yaakov and more Yaakov and more Yaakov. Let's see. Pasuk Kaf. Vayatsev Yaakov Matseva when Rachel died. Right? He made a signpost. A Matseva. A Matseva is a pile of stones, and he did it because he wanted to be able to come back to that place if he had to. Matsevet Furat Rachel Ad Hayom. Pasuk Kaf Aleph. Vayisa Yisrael, Vayek Ohalo, Vayahala Lamigdal Eidel. So there seems to be a preference for Yaakov, but sometimes Yisrael appears. What would we imagine? We would imagine that if HaKadosh Baruch Hu said that his name is Yisrael, that all the references to Yaakov Avinu should be references to Yisrael. Okay, if you turn the page, we'll see how the Gemara deals with this question. It's a Gemara. You know, well, if we turn the page, and if I turn the page. Before we go to the Gemara, I want to remind you of two other psukim that are written on page 2 of this Gemara. One pasuk is Perek Yud Zayin Pasuk Hey. Lo Yikarei Od Et Shimcha Avram. Vayashimcha Avraham. Ki Av Hamon Goyim Nedaticha. And we know, everybody knows, when Avram's name was changed to Avraham, it was with finality. It was like going to the Misrad HaPnim and suffering for days and days until they agreed that you could do something. Having agreed, you're not going to give up, right? If your name was changed from Avram to Avraham, it became Avraham. The second pasuk is Pasuk Tetvav. You see, Pasuk Hey is followed by Pasuk Tetvav. That's not how it really is. It's just that if you have a computer, you could do that. Vayome Elokim El Avraham. Avraham, why? Because it's 10 psukim later. So of course, what is God going to say to Avraham? Well, he's going to call him by his name. And his name is Avraham. What does he say? Sarai Ishtecha. Lo Tikarei Et Shema Sarai. Ki Sara Shema. Now whatever that means, why the name was changed, Rashi says something, right? Lo Tikarei Shema Sarai. You see Rashi? The Mashma Sarai Li. Sarai. Belonging to me. My personal authority. I mean, the word Sar or Sara means to have power or strength or authority. It's my. Velo Lacherim. For me. Ki Sara Stam Shema. Shetehei Sarah al Hakol, that she should be an authority for all. But it's true, what is true about both Avraham and Sarah, that once their name had been changed, it was changed forever. And it was never I'm going to say something that is wrong, but you'll forgive me when we finish the Gemara. That name, the old name, was never used. Never used again. Avraham, forever. Sarah, forever. Yaakov, forever. And Yisrael, sometimes. Yaakov, forever. And Yisrael, sometimes. Even though HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Bekvodo, Va'atzmo, changed Avraham Avinu's, Yaakov Avinu's name to Yisrael. So there's a Gemara. You see the Gemara? The Gemara, it's printed here. There's a Mishnah, Adaf Yud Bet Amud Bet, and you may remember this Mishnah from the Haggadah, but believe it or not, the Mishnah was written before the Haggadah. Yes. And the Mishnah says, Maskirin Yisiyad Mitzrayim Balilot, Amar V'loza Ben Azariah, Enikvei Shibim Shana, V'lo Zachiti Shetiyameh Yisiyad Mitzrayim Balilot, Ache Drasha Ben Zoma, Shenema Laman Tiskoed Yom Seitcha Ma'ezachar Kol Yimei Chayecha Yimei Chayecha Yamim Kol yemei chayecha halelot uchachamim amrim yemei chayecha olam hazeh. Kol? Why does the word kol there? Levi yidbot amashem. Right, so we know that. That's not really our topic, but that's the Mishnah. On this Mishnah, the Gemara has a comment to make. Tanya. Right, there's a brighter. Amar lahen ben zoma lechachamim v'chim maskirim yitziat mishayim l'mot ha-mashiach. ולא כבר נאמר, הנה ימים באים, נו מהשם, לא אומרות, עוד חי השם אשר הולד בני ישראל מארץ מצרים, כי אם חי השם אשר יעלה ואשר יביא את זרע בית ישראל מארץ צפונה, מכל הארצות אשר הידחתים שם. Now, it's not only Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim was a galut which ended. But there are other galuyot. And so that's the question. What should we mention when we say Kriyat Shema? אמרו לו, לא שתהכה יציאת מצרים מקומה, אלא שתהיה שיבת מלכיות עיקר. So, the answer is a very important answer relating to memory. Relating to memory of things. There was יציאת מצרים, and then there was גאולה. There was גאולה, there was redemption. And all of Bnei Yisrael returned to Eretz Yisrael. All of them. Then there was Galut, again, the Assyrian exile, the Babylonian exile. We're going to include the Roman exile. But it doesn't really matter. So when you remember, you say to yourself, what am I doing here? Not here. Like if you're outside, someplace else, outside of Eretz Israel, and you say, what am I doing here? So what do you say? Well, they kicked me out of my home. And they sent me into exile. So, which kicking out do you think about? You think about the Romans kicking the Jews out of Eretz Yisrael. That's what you think about. Because they're the last ones to have done it. But the Gemara says no. That exiles are cumulative. When you think back in the diaspora, and you think back about what am I doing here, you say, well, there's the Roman exile, and before that there was the Assyrian exile, and before that there was the Egyptian exile, because when you think about it, you feel that there is somehow a way, or there should be a way, to relate these exiles to each other. They're not independent, they're not cancelled out, like we were sent into exile, and then redeemed and went to Eretz Israel. That doesn't mean that the Egyptian exile disappeared from history. It was sort of like lying there in wait for us, like a virus lying inside of our bodies. And as soon as we relaxed a little too much, or we became too self-approved, we liked ourselves too much, so it came up, it reared its ugly head again, and that's what the Gemara is saying. Look at the Gemara. It says, "Lo shetehakeh yitziat Mitzrayim mimkoma." So this is the idea that the Gemara comes up with. That somehow, of course, I think first about the most recent exile that I have suffered. But after I think about that, I remember that this happened to me before. It happened to me and I didn't learn my lesson. It happened to me before that. I didn't learn my lesson. This is the way you think about things. So that the exile never leaves us. This, the Gemara says elsewhere, is also to the answer to the question of what happened to Churban Bayit Rishon. You remember Churban Bayit Rishon? 586 BCE, the temple was destroyed. Right? 586 BCE, so the temple was destroyed. 70 CE, the second temple was destroyed. So when I sit down on Tisha B'Av to cry about the destruction of the temple, well, which temple am I thinking about? Both of them. Why both of them? After all, the first destruction of the temple was cancelled out by the rebuilding of the temple, Lecha'ora. Like, we rebuilt the temple, so the first destruction of the temple is gone, disappeared. But the Gemara says, no, it's not gone. When we sit down on Tisha B'Av, what's the most appropriate text that we can read on that night is called Megillat Echa. Right, Megillat Echa. We read Megillat Echa on the night of Tisha B'Av. Now, what is Megillat Echa a description of? The destruction of the first temple. Right? So it's the first temple. That doesn't bother us. So destruction of the first temple is fine. You know, because these destructions are cumulative somehow. They come together. That's what the Gemara says. The Gemara says that when a new destruction comes, it brings up the old destruction. There's nothing more reasonable than that. Now, as a result of this statement of the Gemara says Yitziat Mitzrayim always exists. And it doesn't say it here, but it says it elsewhere, that the destruction of the temple, the Gemara asks like a tricky question, what they do in between the destruction of the temple and the building of the temple, right? They built a new temple. What did they do then? Okay, trick question. But when the temple, second temple was destroyed, we know what they did. They went into mourning over the destruction of both temples, not one. History is never canceled out. And whatever effect history has on the kind of digital reproduction of your emotional self within you, whatever that is, it includes everything that happened to you in history, good and bad. That was the position, that was a position, at least in Chazal. So having said that, the Gemara then goes on and says, it brings a few examples. You look at the, just a second, where is it? Oh, here it is. If you look in the second column, Avram hu Avraham. Bitchila naseh avladam. It's the third line in the second column. The third line in the second column. Avram hu Avraham. Bitchila naseh av la'aram. And that's what Avram means. A father of the Arameans, where he came from. V'lavasof naseh av l'kol ha'olam kulo. So you see that principle would not work. It wouldn't work because B includes A. A was that Avram was kind of the pivotal figure in one place in the world. And B is that Avram became the pivotal figure for the entire world. So because of that, it doesn't make any sense to remember that his name used to be Avram. It doesn't mean anything. Because memory doesn't work unless you can distinguish being the master of Aram, and being the master of the whole world includes Aram. So that distinction is of no significance. And then Sarai, he Sarah, b'tchila naseit Sarai lumata, l'sof naseit Sarah l'kol olam kulo. The same idea, this is quoted in Rashi, that Sarah had was of great significance in the place from which she came, and then she became of great significance worldwide. And since she was of great significance worldwide, so didn't pay to remember. So you see there's a distinction here between the Churban Beit HaMikdash, or Yitziat Mitzrayim, and Yitziat Galuyot Acherot, and the idea of Abraham changing his name, Avram to Avraham, and Sarai to Sarah. That's how the Gemara explains it. Then Tani Ban Kapara. And because of this, that B includes A, because that's what the change was. The change was of cosmic dimension. Avraham became the Lord of the world somehow. He was the leader. He was the one who knew that there was one God. He was the one who spread that word. So that Tani Bar Kapara, Kol HaKorei LaAvraham Avram Ozer Be'esei. Imagine that. Not only is the name Avraham the permanent name of the man, and the earlier name Avram is forgotten, But Bar Kapara says something that is clearly unimaginable to us, and that is that if you call, you're telling the story, and you say, instead of saying Abraham, you say Avram Over Be'eseh. Over Be'eseh, he tells you what the essay is. The essay is, Shinemar, Vayashimcha Avraham, which according to Bar Kapara means that's what everybody has to call him. You have to call him Avraham. And if you call him Avram, then you're over in an essay. Abelazar Omer, Over Be'elav, Noch Erger, as they say. It's even worse. It's worse. Over on an essay means you didn't do something. Over Alav means that you're liable to punishment immediately. He said, V'lo yikare ole tshimcha Avram, ela me'ata, hakare l'sara, sarai hachinami, hatam kuchibrichu amar la'Avraham, sarai ishtecha lo tikare et shema sarai, ki sarai shema. Sarai is not so problematic, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when he changed Sarai's name to Sarah, he was talking to Avraham. And he said, Avraham, you call her Sarah. So if I call her Sarai, so I'm not over on the essay, there's no essay and law connected to Sarai. Don't think it's about Sarai, ki Sarai Shema. Elamata, Akareli Yaakov, Yaakov, Hachinami. So the Gemara says, so God changed Yaakov's name to Yisrael. So how can we call him Yaakov? Shani Hatam, the Hadar Ahadre Kra. Shani Hatam, this is different. Shone Sham. Shani Hatam. Shone Sham, what is different? The Hadar Ahadre Kra. That the Pasuk itself reinstates his name. The Pasuk calls him Yaakov. Now we know a lot of Pasukim called him Yaakov. What Pasuk is are they talking about? Dichtiv, Vayomer Elokim Yisrael, B'marot HaLaila, Vayomer Yaakov, Yaakov. Imagine such a Pasuk. HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaks to Yisrael. This is a real Pasuk. Mem Vav, Perek Mem Vav, Pasuk 2. This is not like a rabbit out of a hat. But the Pasuk says, Vayome Elokim LeYisrael Yaakov. So you see, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying to us is that true, his name is Yisrael, but his name is also Yaakov. So we have agreement, so to speak. We have agreement. Then there's a question in the Gemara. The question in the Gemara says, Rav Yossi Bar Zvida, the fourth line from the end, quotes a pasuk in Nehemiah. Nehemiah is not a book that most of us know Baal Peh, right? I mean, there are other books of the Tanakh that we all know Baal Peh, but Nehemiah, you don't know Baal Peh, so listen. Atah Hashem Elokim Asher Bechadah B'Avram. When did Nehemiah live? A lot later, right? A lot later than the Chumash. A lot later. Nehemiah was responsible for rebuilding the Beit HaMikdash. So, I mean, Ezra was there before Nehemiah, but he couldn't quite do it. Nehemiah was a big shot in the Persian court. According to the book of Nehemiah, he was the wine taster. Now, you know that the wine taster, the wine taster, he didn't want to drink the poisoned wine. Right? In other words, you think it's a good job to be the wine taster of the king? The king wants somebody to taste the wine so that if it's poisoned, the wine taster will die and the king will live. But if you think about it, you understand that the wine taster also doesn't want to die. So the wine taster is usually not just a wine taster, but he's like very, very well connected to all the people in the court, and especially the people who might be interested in killing the king. Because what he wants to do, the wine taster, is stop them before they get the poison into the wine. so that the wine taster has to be a man of great significance. And Nehemiah didn't want to taste the wine really, because it was all stam yenom, right? It was also, you know, not to drink that wine, so he didn't want to drink it. So he wanted to guarantee, without drinking it, that the wine was okay. The king had a great amount of respect for Nehemiah and for his achievement, and he agreed that Nehemiah should be released from his position as wine taster to go to Eretz Yisrael and straighten things out, to help the Jews who were there build the temple and the wall around Yerushalayim. And when he left, he came with a new edict from the king, whose name was Artaxashta. Don't use that for your children or grandchildren. And it was similar to the charge that Koresh, Cyrus, the king of Persia, originally gave to Sheshbatzar, who came in Aliyah, the first Aliyah, Belshazzar, Zerubbabel. In other words, when you read the book of Nehemiah, it sounds like there's Zerubbabel, Ezra, Nehemiah. That's what it sounds like. And it may be that was the way it was. Ezra came to Eretz Yisrael about 80 years after Zerubbabel. And Zerubbabel came to Eretz Yisrael around the year 536, 537. You remember that Yirmiyahu HaNavi said that the exile would be 50 years in one place and 70 years in another place. So in fact, what happened was, it was 50 years. They started rebuilding the temple and made the Mizbeach. That took them 20 years, and they started sacrificing on the Mizbeach in 516 BCE. And that was the Aliyah Zerubbabel. Like in modern times, they call it the Aliyah Rishonah, Aliyah Shniyah, Aliyah Shlishit. So the parallel is hard to avoid. The second Aliyah was the Aliyah of Ezra. And then came Nehemiah. Because Ezra apparently was not able to deal with the problems. Ezra was more of a ivory tower kind of person. You know, he was a Kohen, and he was a great scholar, and he was a great leader, but he wasn't so good at putting the stones down and, you know, putting them in the right place. And Nehemiah came from Paras. He got a release from his job as the Tsar Mashkim. I say he got a release because after 12 years in Eretz Yisrael, Nehemiah went back to take up his old position, because he felt, did you ever hear this line? He could do more for the Jewish people in the diaspora. And so Chazal, it's also interesting, Chazal were angry at Nehemiah. They said he shouldn't have left. They didn't say exactly why they were angry at him. It says that in the Gemara that they were angry at Nehemiah, and the probable cause is the fact that he left Eretz Yisrael. Not that he left the Jews in a lurch or anything. That was a different problem. But how could you live in Eretz Yisrael, build the Beit HaMikdash, build the walls around, and also leave? So that was the story of Nehemiah. So now all of this story I told you because the Gemara quotes a pasuk in Nehemiah, that Nehemiah was a serious person. And the pasuk says, Ata Hashem Elokim Hashem Bechata. Do you recognize the pasuk? You should recognize the pasuk. If you don't recognize the pasuk, then you're in the wrong place in the mornings. So the pasuk says, pasuk Nehemiah, Ata Hashem Elokim Hashem Bechata. Avram, how could Nehemiah call Avram Avinu Avram? I mean, we just got finished saying that if you change back to Avram, you're either over on an essay or you're over on a lot essay. Both bad. Lot essay is worse, probably. But both are bad. So, but here's the Chemia. I told Hashem, Elokim, Hashem, Bechadu, Avram. Omar Lehatam, Navihu dekam isader leshvachei derachmana ma dehava meikara. So it's an exception. It's prophetic. He heard min hashamayim that he should use the name Avram. But for us, who are not prophets, and we don't get that kind of information from heaven, the original limit exists. And that limit is that you can't call Avram Avinu Avram. You have to call him Avraham. That's what the Gemara says. So we're left with the question, as we're always left with the question. So why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu give Yaakov another name? If the names are interchangeable, the names of Yaakov and Yisrael, and the name of Yisrael is kind of symbolic. It reminds me of an event in history. But it doesn't really matter if I call him Yaakov, Yaakov, as in the Pasuk in Membav, Pasuk Bet. Or I call him Vayom Elokim Yisrael. It doesn't seem to make any difference. But if it doesn't make any difference, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu do it? So what I'd like to do, I think we have time, is learn on page 3 a passage from the Ein Ayah. The Ein Ayah, your Ein in this case is short for Ein Yaakov. Ein Yaakov is a book that collects all the non-halachic parts of Shas, like a kind of reverse of the halachic composers, like the Rif and the Rosh. And then, you know, over the years, Perushim were added to the collection, and which is called Ein Yaakov. When Rav Kook became a Rav in... I don't know, maybe. Yeah, it doesn't strike me somehow. Anyway, when he was a very young Rav, still in Europe, he started writing a commentary on Agadot, according page after page after page, just like the Ein Yaakov. And when he was in Europe, he wrote a commentary on the first two Masechtot of Shas, Brachot and Shabbat. And to the best of my knowledge, he never continued this project. Brachot and Shabbat was all that he did, although who knows, there may be notebooks hanging around someplace that have all sorts of interesting things in it that we don't know about yet. So recently, the third generation of Talmidim, you know, really Talmidim of Rav Tzvi Yehuda, his son, published the Ein Ayah in a very attractive way. Three volumes, the text of the Gemara, the text of the Ein Ayah, with references. And this is, I think, a scanned version of this part of the Ein Ayah. Right? As opposed, you know, I don't think it exists. I don't know, but I don't think that it exists in your computer. You'd have to scan it as we did, scan it into a computer file. So this is what he says. You see, the beginning of it is black. That's the Gemara. Kayotze bo ata omer lo yikareo shimcha Yaakov ki Yisrael yishmecha lo sheyaker Yaakov bimkomo el Yisrael ikar v'Yaakov tefelo. So this is what Rav Kook wants to explain. What could that possibly mean? A person has two names, but they're not like we do. Moshe, Yehuda, Shmero, Yitzchak, Schwartz. It's not like that. This idea that everybody who ever died at any time in the past should have somebody walking around with his name, that idea was not yet born in the time of the Torah. And so everybody had one name. What do you mean to say that his name was Yaakov and his name was Yisrael, and Yisrael was the more important name? And if Yisrael is the more important name, why is he called Yaakov all the time? Not all the time, but 90% of the time. if the name Yisrael is of such great significance, so Yisrael should win in every case. So this is what Rav Kook says. Ha'adam ha'prati v'ha'olam heim domim b'hanagatam l'shvemutam. What he means is that sometimes you see things in people, that there are strange things that people do, strange kinds of, we call them psychological aberrations. People are sometimes funny. They don't seem to always work in a straight kind of way. He says those things that you see in people are really part of the nature of the world. A person who seems to be a little different, that person is reflecting the little different that you don't notice in the world all the time. That's what Rav Kook said. Ba'adam yeshtam kochot tovim v'ra'im. In every person, there is the ability, a koach is an ability to do good, and there's also the ability to do not so good. Ra'im. Ra'im kishem yotzim lepo'al. Im yu mu'ukavim shelo yitzu klal lepo'al, ya bei dvarim tovim chaseirim. Shetzarich lahem koach hakochot ra'im. Imagine this. I don't know how many of you are into psychology, but it's definitely an interesting idea. He says, let's say you would spend a lot of time, you know you have some bad trait, or some trait you'd like to get rid of, like the Rambam says in the Hilchot Deot. He says, look, it's not good to be a spendthrift, it's not good to be too cheap, it's not good to be easily angered. You know, people get angry all the time, everything is very bad. So he says, the Rav Kook says, look, inside of you, let's say a person gets angry, easily. He says, inside of you, you have enough koach, you have enough strength to stop yourself from being angry, ever. You'll never get angry. You can do that. He says, but if you do that, what you're using up the power of goodness inside of you, and maybe you're not getting your money's worth. Because if you're so focused all the time on this bad trait that you have, and you have to use all of your energy in order to control that bad trait, so it may be that energy, which could be applied to other things in the world, other goodnesses that you might do, is being wasted a little bit, so that the better thing to do we'll be able to find a balance, because as educators might tell you, anger is not always a bad thing, because anger is also a strong expression of your opinion, of what you think is good, and what you think should be fun. So that's a good thing to do. That's a good thing. Sometimes with children, anger explains to them that you really mean it. Well, they didn't understand that you really meant it before, because the issue may not be so clear to the children. Like, don't say that about them. The children don't understand about Lashon Hara. They don't understand that it could be devastating. Right? They have no such experience. So it's important sometimes for you to make the point with great fortitude. You have to be very determined. So this is what Rav Kook says. He says, line 5, Im yu me'ukazim, shelo yetsu klal el ha'poal. If the bad of you is totally, what? Good, that's a good psychological word, right? If the bad in you, I don't want to use those words, but okay. Suppressed. It's a word. It's a word that in modern psychology describes what a person is doing. You know, it's like you're a bottle and there's a cork and you just keep pushing the cork in, further in. That's called suppression. So he says, Im ayu me'ukavim shelo yetsu klal al ha'poal, yu abei dvarim tovim chaseirim. That energy would not be used for other good things. You know, you're spending all your time trying to remake yourself in an irrelevancy. Like, not a total irrelevancy, but what difference? Everybody gets angry sometimes. You made a decision, you're not going to get angry ever. But it may not be worth it. It may not be worth that. He says, you are beit varim tovim chaseyim, shetzerich lehem koach, hakochot haraim v'cheskatam v'kishyutam. So he says, anger. I mean, here they say anger, right? They're saying anger because they think it's the simplest example to bring. Because anger can sometimes produce good things. It can clarify your position. It can tell others what you feel about that kind of, you know, especially in the world today. World today is we live a very open-minded world. You know, like you can do whatever you want as long as you're not killing the other person that you're doing it with. It's okay. So now, in order to, if you might think that's not so correct because the Torah directs us sometimes in another way, so you have to make that point strongly. You can't just say, well, you know, doesn't go for the Torah. But you have to say, it's terrible because it's against the Torah. So anger is something that produces positive things. Anam im yetzu b'lo shum moneha ya'aru gvul v'yaviyu et ha'olam l'matzav nishchat me'od. So that this can actually serve you badly. If you don't have anger at your disposal, your anger is one of the things in your artillery to use at the proper time, then bad things are going to result. You're not going to be able to make the point that you want to make. Anam. Okay. Batorah nirmaz ki yetze tchila asu. What? Okay, I'm sorry. Tchila isav, shehu tchila, shehu anosei shel kochot anisim. Amnam, kol hakochot hagasim. I'm sorry. Kol hakochot hagasim. Gas means the opposite of fine. Right? That's Esav. He's like represents all of that. Amnam Yaakov, lo mena yitziyato. He's talking about the birth of Yaakov and Esav. So it says, like, imagine that if Yaakov was holding on to Esau's foot, maybe he should have just schlepped him back into his mother's womb and put him where he belonged, in second place. But he didn't do that. He didn't do that. He says, Yaakov lo mana yitziyato, avo yada ochezet be'akev Esav. That's what Yaakov did. Shelo yelech tirtzono b'lo gvul. He didn't think. He thought that Esav had qualities that could be good and could be bad. But shelo yelchu b'lo gvul, he says he wanted to make sure Esav understood that he wouldn't be able to do whatever he wanted to do and to live any way that he wanted to live. Shelo yelech tirtzono b'lo gvul. Amnam, kasher hakochot ha'ra'im yetzu l'hapoal, ein da'at. So this is the problem. This is like the human desire. That the tov in us should dominate the ra in us. The tov in us should dominate over the ra in others. And that was the relationship between Yaakov and Esav. Yaakov was the one who said to Esav, okay, you can be Esav, but there's a limit. We're not going to let you be too much Esav. And that's why when he was born, he was holding on to Akev Esav, because that was going to stop him. That was stopping him from being as much Esav as he thought he could be. And so, you know, when Yaakov and Esav meet after Yaakov comes back to Eretz Canaan, they're very friendly and they're very happy to meet each other, and they're just dying to give each other gifts and stuff. And then Esav rides away, because Esav understood, and this is a metaphor for us in the battle between Yaakov and Sarosel Esav, right, in the physical battle, and the end was exactly the same as the birth, right? It was hard for Yaakov. Yaakov had certain difficulties, but he won, it would seem. And since he won, he was able to make demands on Esav. Why he made those demands? Tell me your name, tell me who you are. That's a separate consideration, but that's what happened when Yaakov and Esav met. They did the birth over again. They made the birth relationship over again through this story between Sarosel Esav and Yaakov Avinu. And then he says, As Tetzei, Ahishtalmut, line 14, B'chol Adarav. This kind of working together, this kind of being able to do something that you didn't think you were able to do, V'alzei Yoresh Shem Yisrael, Sheba Achakas Yisarita, Im Elokim, V'im Anashim. That this is Yisrael. Yisrael fought to limit the damage that Esav could do, to limit his expression, his personality expression. Al ken gam biyot hatov asuk b'sidur hakochot ra'im tzarichu mikol makom lasim netek v'resem shelo yifritzu gvul litchazek yoter midayim b'metziyutam. So that's Yisrael. Yisrael is making this limit. Ki im yu chazakim yoter midayim lo yasuru mimashmato. So he says that this always has to be applied. You always have to indicate a certain dominance of the good over the bad, because otherwise when the bad makes its way, itself known to us, there's not going to be any way for us to keep it back. And that's why the Gemara says that Yaakov is secondary, because Yaakov just holds on. It just prevents the worst from happening a little bit. It holds on to the leg of Esav. But Yisrael is the one who makes the major step. V'gam b'chlal ha'olam lo yafshar she'klol ha'olam v'shum ofen lavo. Ki im b'etchazek gam ken ha'kochot ha'chomriyim v'afilu ha'pchutim shebahem uvo al yedei anashim shelo eskilu le'choz b'tov v'leshof l'shleimut ha'amitit tzorchan shel Yisrael shel di עוד דעת השם ודרכיו שהם צדקה ומשפט חסד בעולם. שם רסן שלא יוסיף הרע להגדיל עקב יותר מדי ולשלול לגמרי את רוח הנדיבה של האדם. So that people have these inclinations to do bad. And that doesn't mean that Esav was doing bad all the time. You know, he fooled Yitzchak, after all, you remember. So, I imagine that if he was able to fool Yitzchak, it wasn't that Yitzchak had become a fool. It was rather that Yitzchak was optimistic about his children. And so Esav had this opportunity to fool him. Rav Kook says, that's who we are. We are Yaakov and Yisrael at the same time. We have to always apply the power of Yaakov, which means like risun. Just be calm. Don't get too excited. But when things get really bad, then we have to apply the power of Yisrael to overcome. And so according to Rav Kook, the Gemara is right. The Gemara is right that Yaakov Avinu had two names, Yisrael and Yaakov, and they were names of action. Do this, make that happen. And therefore, you could call Yaakov Yaakov, and you could call him Yisrael as well. And these two names tell me something about the human endeavor. And the human endeavor is, on the one hand, to use all the kochot, all the powers that HaKadosh Baruch Hu enabled us to have, powers that could be used for good, that could be used for bad, like anger. Anger could be good, anger could be bad, it could be terrible. So that Yaakov, unlike Avraham and Sarai, Avram and Sarai, when their names were changed, it was as the Maharal said. The Maharal explained at length in Gvuras Hashem, the Maharal says that Avraham and Sarai, the point of changing their name was to indicate that they were new people. You know, they were not connected to their past. They weren't connected to their parents, their grandparents, to the idolatry of the past. But they were new people. And we understand why Avram Avinu, I mean, that was something that Avram Avinu learned, that the child is born with his parents' past. As we talked about in the beginning today, about Yitziat Mitzrayim, that exile, and another exile, that recollection goes back as far as Jewish history goes back. How far does Jewish history go back? Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov. Jewish history goes back to Avraham Avinu. How so? How so? Because Avraham was born standing 2 feet before God. That's when he was born. Who was his father? No father. He didn't have a father. Because Terach had a son whose name was Avram. He didn't have a father. And Sarah also didn't have a father. So that the name change with Abraham and Sarah, the name change was to produce the perfect couple who would have a child that would not be limited by memory. He wouldn't have to remember where he came from, because he could say in all honesty, I came from Abraham and from Sarah. And there is no previous generation. I mean, I'm saying it in a homiletical way, but I think that that must be the way they felt. When it came to Yaakov, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was teaching Yaakov about the human condition and what we could do to make the most of the talents and the difficulties that we have. That was Yaakov Avinu. So Yaakov Avinu was the one who was going to teach the Torah to his children. He created Bnei Yisrael, right? Yaakov Avinu created that, all of his children, the better ones, and the ones who had little problems along the way, all of his children were his children, unlike Yishmael, who was the son of Avram and Hadar, and unlike Esav, even the twin, was not exactly the son of his father, because to be the son of his father, he had to have this new idea that there was Yaakov and Yisrael, that you had responsibility to limit the misuse of human characteristics, and you had the obligation to use human characteristics, the things you inherit in your genes, in the best possible way in this world. So that the name change of Yaakov and Yisrael is something different than the name change of Avraham and Sarah. Avraham and Sarah were born when their names were changed. And that's why only Avraham and only Sarah could be the mother and the father of the new generation. And that's why we can doubt. And we can say, Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak. That's a starting point. It's not just an imaginary starting point. It's a real starting point. They were born without parents. What?
Why not Yitzchak? Why you, leave him out?
We didn't. Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak. So he didn't change his name.
Play with him,
yeah. Okay, next year, on the previous parasha, we'll talk about it. We'll finish with Yitzchak for this year. So that Yaakov was the most, he's the most human of the Avot. He's the one that's the easiest to sympathize with. Because just like us, like we've got problems. Everybody has, Yaakov also had problems. He had problems in Aram, and he had problems with Lavan, and he has problems there with Canaan, he has problems with, and they're all problems in the family. You ever hear that? Like problems in the family? The only people who have no problems in the family are people who don't have family. Everybody else has problems. So Yaakov Avinu, it's easy to sympathize with him. Say, look at the guy's working so hard. He was there and nobody appreciated him coming here, and he meets up with a war, and it just goes on and on and on. You know, Yaakov's life is difficult. It's difficult, and therefore we sympathize with Yaakov. We don't sympathize with Yitzchak, because Yitzchak was perfect. Right? Olah Tmima, the Gemara says. That he was a pure sacrifice. He was willing. God said, sacrifice Yitzchak. So you say, here I am. Let's go get sacrificed. I mean, he lived in a different world than most people. People tend to ask, as philosophers, modern philosophers say, how could anybody do that? How could anybody kill a son? How could a son allow himself to be killed? I mean, we're talking about different kind of people. We talk about Yitzchak. But Yaakov was not like that. And yet, Yaakov had a responsibility, because he was creating Am Yisrael, and Am Yisrael is distinguishable. The Rambam says, based on the Gemara, that Am Yisrael, people Am Yisrael, go milei chasadim. So the Rambam says that if a person, I mentioned, is a person like is very angry all the time, he's probably not Jewish, because the Rambam says, if he says a man, if you meet a girl, and she invites you to her family's house to, you know, to whatever, and you come into the house and they're all screaming and yelling and throwing things at each other, you know, the brothers and the sisters and the mother, and all. So the Rambam says you have to be careful, because they're probably not Jewish, because Jews don't act that way. I don't want to argue with the Rambam statistically. What I mean to say is only that the Rambam thought that maybe this idea of Yaakov and Yisrael that was enunciated by Rav Kook, right, based on the Gemara that we saw in Brachot, that this idea, in fact, instructs us so completely that we do suspect people who have extreme traits, you know, traits that are not easily translatable into good community action. Okay, have a good Shabbos.